I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Sports Mole's Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Pascal Lemaire, and alongside me is Barney Corkhill to run through Match Day 9 in the top flight. Did you make it through the international break? We only just about survived, which is more than can be said for some of the Premier League star players. Sergio Aguero, after scoring 5 in 20 minutes for Man City against Newcastle, has done his hamstring and scuppered fantasy football managers all over, including yours truly. We've also had our first managerial casualty since we were last with you, as Liverpool and Sunderland make changes. Former Borussia Dortmund man Jurgen Klopp is in Anfield, and it's with the Reds we start as they travel to Tottenham Hotspur in the first game of the weekend. Barnes, there's only one place to start here, and that's Rodgers' departure and Jurgen Klopp's appointment. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, it's a big revival, I think, for Liverpool. They don't really have a history of bringing in a massive name manager. Usually is a manager who makes their name at Liverpool. So it's a bit of a departure from years gone by, but I think it's a very good one. It was between him and Ancelotti, by all accounts, and for me, I think Klopp was just the better fit of the two. Ancelotti, his credentials, you'd have to say, he's better in that respect. 3 Champions League victories. Klopp obviously did superb work at Dortmund, but the last season there with them wasn't his best. So, credential-wise, I don't think he stacks up to Ancelotti, but it's just the way he is, his demeanour. He's got a cult hero status about him, really, at Dortmund, and it's easy to see him doing the same at Liverpool. I think it's a really good arrival. I think is a really good appointment for Liverpool. I'd say Rodgers probably was time for him to go. I think the timing was a bit strange, doing it on the same day as a Merseyside derby, but by all accounts his fate was already sealed before that draw against Everton, so probably it's easy to see why he has gone. Transfer wise he hasn't really impressed too much, and Klopp has a better track record in that regard. So hopefully he brings that to Liverpool. But yeah, I think it's a very good appointment and looking forward to seeing how it pans out.
Yeah, I see what you mean about his credentials there, because certainly, you know, when you've got two big names like Ancelotti and Klopp available there, you certainly think, you know, maybe that's what encouraged them to get rid of Rodgers. And I think with Klopp, you know, some people have thought it was Ancelotti the right man, but I think with Klopp, you know, every big club in Europe, had they needed a manager, would have been in for him. So I think it's certainly a bit of a coup for Liverpool. And yeah, like you say, I think the departure after the 1-0 draw with Everton, you know, a bit odd, because Everton been in really good form of late, and it wasn't necessarily the worst result at Goodison Park getting a draw there. I think it was the way the game went. You know, they took the lead. It was very fortuitous. Well, not fortuitous, but, you know, Everton could have done a lot better to keep out Ings's goal. You know, Tim Howard really, you know, pouring the Everton goal there. And they couldn't quite hold that lead till half-time, could they? Lukaku hit back just before the break, and that was a real killer blow there. And second half, probably Everton, if there was one side who was going to win it, maybe them. But it wasn't the worst result, and probably a bit surprising to see Rodgers go. But it's goals that are a real problem for Liverpool at the moment, isn't it? You know, they've scored exactly once in 8 of their last 11 Premier League games, and that's where the real problems lie, and maybe where Rodgers is, why Rodgers went, because they scored so many goals and were so electric, you know, in that season where they almost won the title, and perhaps that's why he went, just because they just never really got going this season.
Yeah, and I think they'll have a boost in that regard this weekend, because Sturridge should be available, Coutinho might be fit again, Benteke might be missing out, but once Sturridge, you'd probably say he still isn't at full fitness after such a lengthy injury break, but of course he came in, he scored a couple of goals already, up and running for the season. Benteke's up and running for the season, and if we can keep all the strikers fit, then that should help in that regard. I think that the absence of Sturridge, both last season and the start of this season, that didn't help Rodgers at all, and I think it would have been much closer to top 4 had Sturridge been fit for the whole of last season. So if they can keep him fit for this season, the majority of this season, if finally those injury troubles are behind him now, I think it's certainly going to help in that regard goal-wise, because he's a finisher, he scores goals whenever he gets a good run in the team, so that will certainly help Liverpool, I think.
Yeah, and it's certainly a very difficult opening game for him, isn't it? Going to Spurs, who have been in pretty decent form of late. You know, their last 2 Premier League games, they beat Man City 4-1, and then their most recent game, 2-2 draw at Swansea it was, just before the international break. And certainly, I think they can perhaps feel a bit hard done by from that game. They had to fight back from behind twice to get a point in that game. Christian Eriksen with two free kicks. You know, he scored six free kicks since he first came to the Premier League in 2013, and that's more than anyone else. He's really, really, really good at the dead ball situation, and they had plenty of chances, really, you know, to go on and win that game. But in the end, it was actually Hugo Lloris who kept them with a point because he made that brilliant last-gasp save from Fernandes, I think it was. So, you know, 2-2 draw at Swansea. It's not the worst result, but certainly I think they would have gone there hoping to win because Swansea didn't have a very good month last month. They didn't win a single game. And Spurs, you know, if they have real top four aspirations, that's the sort of side, you know, when a side's, you know, out of form like that, you should be able to go there and get a win if you really want to finish in the top four. They're sitting eighth now, which isn't too bad. And certainly they've improved of late after quite a slow start to the season.
Yeah, they definitely have improved. There's four games without a victory at the start of the season, and now they're without the defeat since the opening day of the season, and the only team in the Premier League to do that now. So they're starting to get the wheels in motion a bit. I think they've certainly shown more signs of being able to challenge for the top four in the last few weeks. That 4-1 win against Manchester City, obviously, is the standout result. That was their last home game. Still unbeaten at home this season, which is a big plus for them, because there have been times where they've struggled at White Hart Lane, particularly against the big teams in recent seasons. So definitely all signs pointing in the right direction for Tottenham, because as you say, it wasn't the best start to the season. Three back-to-back draws after that opening day defeat, but now Sunderland, Palace, probably expect them to win those games, but a 4-1 win against Manchester City, and you mentioned there the 2-2 draw against Swansea, two very good results. I think this will be another good test, particularly against Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp there, but things certainly looking in the right direction at the moment for Tottenham.
Yeah, definitely. As Spurs unbeaten at home this season, but then you look at the recent games between these two sides. Liverpool have won five consecutive Premier League games, you know, against Spurs. So they've really had the better of Spurs in recent times. What's your score prediction for this one?
It's a very tough one to call because of Klopp being there. It should give Liverpool a big boost, and you know this could go either way. It's a very hard one to predict. I'm gonna go for a 2-2 draw, I think.
Yeah, I fancy it being a draw as well. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what side of football Liverpool play. You know, Klopp in the past, his Dortmund team, they used to be very exciting, very counter-attacking. But you wonder, tough away game like this, whether he might, you know, just take a more defensive-minded approach in this sort of opening game of his tenure. So I'm going to go for a 1-0 draw. So me and Barnes both see this one ending as a draw.
On to the 3 p.m. kickoffs, of which there are six this Saturday. And we start with Chelsea against Aston Villa, two of the bottom five going head-to-head at Stamford Bridge. Pascal, will start with the home side, another defeat last time out to Southampton.
Yeah, and a second home defeat of the season as well. You know, Jose Mourinho's Chelsea famed for being, you know, that good at home, but that was the first time in the Premier League under Mourinho that any team has scored three at Stamford Bridge. So just shows what an achievement it was from Southampton, and especially, you know, they fell behind, didn't they, to that Willian free kick. But to be honest, after that, Southampton, you know, fully deserved the victory. Davis, Manner and Pella on the score sheet there. And you have to say that just watching the game back, you just thought, where's the Chelsea defence from years gone by? You know, you looked at some of the players like Tadic, he was having a great time against Ivanovic. Pella, he's in a really good vein of form at the moment. He was having a good game. Mane as well. They were just finding too much space in and around the box. And Chelsea now 16th in the table, which is incredible considering. I mean, I know it was a slow start to the season, but that's now 8 games of the season gone. And, you know, they're down there. The three newly promoted sides are all above Chelsea. They're 10 points behind City now. And to be honest, 10 points, considering the start they've had, Chelsea might think they're a bit lucky there. The gap probably could be a lot worse. And you have to say, looking at the table the way it is at the moment, it's hard to see them retaining the title.
It is hard to see that. And it's just unbelievable what's happening to Chelsea at the moment. They're just such a shadow of the team that they were last season. As you say, are they out of the title race already? Perhaps. No team's ever finished higher than fifth after being 16th or below after 8 games. Chelsea in 16th now, of course. They've got a big, tall order to get back into the title race. And as you say, 10 points the gap now. It'd be some feat if they managed to claw that back with 30 games left of the season. You touched on it there. The defence is just, it's unbelievable how much worse they are defensively. And it's the manner of the goals they conceded against Southampton. There's individual errors which you can't really account for if you're Jose Mourinho. Of course, he went on that big rant after that monologue to the TV cameras after that Southampton match. So pressure's starting to tell on him a bit, but the defenders, the likes of Cahill, Terry, Ivanovic, they're just being shrugged off by Mane and Tadic. Tadic ran rings around Ivanovic at times, and the fact that Ivanovic is out for this weekend could actually be a blessing in disguise the way he's playing, because he's been a shadow of his former self, and Mourinho doesn't really seem to drop him, even if he is playing bad, because he's been so consistent for so long. This is the first really poor spell of his career at Chelsea, but it's just he's having such a poor season. Every single game he seems to be getting run rings around, and it's hard, as we say, it's hard to see a way back for Chelsea in the title race, and it's hard to see them improving at the moment, because it's not that they're just being edged out in games, they're deservedly losing these games, and I'm not really sure what the problem is, and but Mourinho needs to find out a way to solve it.
He certainly does, yeah. And you know, if they did lose this game, which you know is unlikely, I mean, Villa quite outformed themselves, you know, but that would be the first time that he's ever lost successive home league games if they do lose. So it's a massive, massive pressure coming into this game, and certainly you have to say that if Chelsea are going to have any chance of getting in back into that title race, they need a really, really sort of consistent run of, you know, wins to put together. And you'd probably say that there is a decent chance of doing it if you look at their upcoming fixtures. Villa at home here, then they go to West Ham, then they host Liverpool, go to Stoke, host Norwich. So those next five fixtures until sort of towards the end of November, you'd certainly say that they do offer Chelsea a good chance, you know, to string a good run of form together. And I just get the feeling that it could potentially happen. You know, a lot of their players have come out and said, I saw Hazard said he's never played this badly. Diego Costa got left out of the Spain squad, so he's had plenty of, you know, he's not picked up an injury while on the way in international duty. He'll be fresh coming into this game after that suspension that he's recently served. So I think there's potential here for Chelsea to really blow away Villa, but you know, we've thought that in many games this season, and they just keep letting us down, Chelsea. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in this one.
Yeah, I think if Chelsea could have chosen a match to have at the end after the international break, after Mourinho's had a bit of time with his squad, Villa at home would be right up there, because we talked about Chelsea's form. Villa's form is no better at all. Four defeats in a row now in the Premier League. Still in the bottom three, only Sunderland and Newcastle below them at the moment. And they're not performing too badly, but the results just aren't coming. Only that one win in the season so far, that was on the opening day. They've got one draw, and that was at home to Sunderland, who were right down with them. In the last match against Stoke, it was, again, Marko Arnautovic, the only goal of the match. It wasn't exactly a terrible Aston Villa performance, but as we say, they're just not getting those points on the board, and they need to rectify that. Sherwood, you can tell he's really feeling the pressure a bit now, because his post-match interviews, he's always mentioning how the fans are getting on their back and how they've got a right to, because he readily admits Villa haven't been good enough so far, but he needs a big result. Whether it's going to come at Stamford Bridge, that's a really big ask, but he needs one sooner rather than later.
Certainly, yeah, and you mentioned the four defeats in a row in the Premier League there. If you look back at all of those, they've all been by a one-goal margin, so they're not getting blown away by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, they're equally not doing enough to even get a point from some of these games. And you know, those some of the recent results you mentioned there, the 2-2 draw at home to Sunderland, losing 1-0 at home to Stoke, they're games they really should be getting, you know, at least say one win out of those two. And you know, if they say lost by one goal again here this weekend, that'll be the first time that in the Premier League that any side has ever lost five in a row by a one-goal margin. So you can maybe say they're slightly unlucky, but with a run of form, you know, this bad since the opening day, not being able to win, you know, since the opening day, you'd say that it's probably not bad luck. It's just, you know, a bad side. They're not playing too well, and they certainly need to improve soon. And you look at their fixtures coming up, and you'd probably say it'll be really tough for them to be able to do so. Going to Stamford Bridge here, and they host Swansea, they go to Spurs, host Man City, and then go to Everton in their next five fixtures. All of those look really difficult, and probably in all five of those games, you'd say the other team would start the game as favourites. So you just wonder when Villa will get that next win, you know, since that opening day when they got a Bournemouth. So really tough run of fixtures coming up for Villa, and certainly hard to see them getting out of the bottom three anytime soon.
They'll definitely be underdogs going into this weekend as well. Their record against Chelsea is pretty poor. 30 goals conceded in the last 8 visits to Stamford Bridge. What's your score prediction for this one?
Yeah, you've got to side with Chelsea here. I know these two are in the bottom five, and you know, if it was any other team apart from Chelsea, you might say it'd be quite an even contest, but surely they can't. They can't lose this one, Chelsea, surely. They have to win this one, so I'm going to pick them to win 3-0.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with that. Completely agree with the scoreline as well. Chelsea, as we've mentioned, they've surprised us by how consistent this poor run's been for them so far. But, you mentioned they can't lose this one. It's against a really out-of-form Aston Villa at home. And if they do lose it, Mourinho might find himself under a bit of pressure and with questions to ask from Abramovich. So I agree with that. I'm going to go for a 3-0 victory. So we're both going for comfortable Chelsea victories.
Moving to the south of London now, where Crystal Palace take on West Ham. Mars, let's start with Palace, sitting fourth at the moment after back-to-back wins.
Yeah, look like they might be going off the boil a little with those two defeats to Man City and Tottenham, but right back to it with two consecutive wins now. Clean sheets in both, which is obviously very good defensively for them to go with their exciting attacking talent. And last time out against West Brom, 2-0 win. Decent result. West Brom, they didn't play very well. Pulis was quite critical of the team after the match, but Palace, they look good, and we seem to talk about it most weeks, but the key players again performed. Zaha gave Brunt a torrid time down the wing, obviously won the penalty. Bolasie wasn't as involved in open play, but he got his goal, obviously ending a long drought at Selhurst Park. I think it was New Year's Day 2013, his last goal at Selhurst Park before that. And it was a really good, brave header as well. Kabay, obviously another good performance from him in the centre of the park, got another penalty. And I think that was Crystal Palace's sixth penalty already this season, which is an incredible tally so early on in the season. And again, it just comes down to those tricky players. They're so hard to deal with for any team, really. And they'll fancy their chances. They can hurt any team and every team in the league with those players.
Certainly, yeah. And Kabay, you know, scoring goals this season, but he's also quite a complete midfield player, isn't he? You know, he's a real key cog to that Palace midfield. No player in the league has made more interceptions than him, so he's really performing well for them. And look at the record they've got now: 15 points from 8 games, just 3 points behind, you know, leaders Man City. Because, you know, no one else. I mean, City started the season obviously so well, but they've gone off the boil of late. And Palace, they're right up there, along with teams, you know, like West Ham and Leicester, other surprise teams like that. And you look back at the stats, last time Palace, you know, had more points than this in a top flight season, you know, this many games in, they finished third. So that's a good omen back in 1990-91. But I think it'd be obviously a huge shock if they pulled that off this season. But, you know, they really should be targeting the way they're going, the players they've got. I think, you know, a top half finish is very, very minimum. But the way they're going, how they're doing at the moment, you have to say potentially, you know, a top 7, top 6 finish could be on the cards for them.
Yeah, and I certainly think they're capable of it from what they've shown so far. I think the next step up for them is a bit beyond them so far. You look at the games they've lost this season. It's against Arsenal, Man City, Tottenham. Big teams who you'd say are probably just a little step above them at the moment. But the next run of fixtures, they've got West Ham here, who have also made a very bright start to the season. They'll go into this one fancying their chances here. Leicester, Leicester made a good start to the season. The next 4 games are all against other sides currently in the top 6. So it will be a testing period for them. But Man City and Manchester United, perhaps you'd argue that they'll go into those games as favourites against Palace, partly because of the Palace, the teams Palace have lost to so far this season. But against West Ham and Leicester, they'll be very confident of going and winning those games, and they've shown no signs so far of slowing down, and they'll certainly give all those teams a run for their money.
Yeah, definitely. But I think West Ham, they'll go into this pretty confident. I mean, both West Ham and Palace tend to do better away from home, and be interesting to see how Palace approach this game against a side like West Ham, who, you know, are usually much better on the road. And West Ham, they come into this game just a point behind Palace in 6th place, but maybe they should be a bit higher up than that, given, you know, their last 2 results. They're back-to-back 2-2 draws against Norwich and Sunderland, 2 sides who, you know, given some of West Ham's results this season, you know, they won at Arsenal, Liverpool and City, they might have considered, you know, that they should have won those games. But, you know, last time out at Sunderland, they fell 2-0 down there to what was then the league's bottom side, I think. So that was a really disappointing start, given their previous away games. Like I said, they're beating Arsenal, Liverpool and City. So, you know, going 2-0 down like they did, very, very disappointing. But then Jermaine Lenz, the Sunderland player who put them 2-0 in front, got sent off. And that certainly helped West Ham. And they fought back thanks to Carl Jenkinson and Dimitri Payet. Payet again starring for them. And certainly, you know, the only 2 points from those 2 games against Norwich and Sunderland, perhaps a bit disappointing, but to come back from 2-0 down against Sunderland was a positive. Obviously showed some good character, and yeah, for them to be sitting 6th in the table with 14 points from their opening 8 games, a fantastic start under Slaven Bilic.
Yeah, and you've touched on Payet there. We've mentioned Crystal Palace's key players performing. Payet has quickly developed into a very key player for West Ham. His record recently in terms of setting up goals and scoring goals is very impressive. 14 in his last 16 league games, with 5 goals, 9 assists. Still doesn't seem to be getting the nod at international level, which is a bit strange the way he started the season, and he seems to be a bit frustrated by that, judging by some of his comments recently. But at club level, he's certainly doing very well, and he's one of the key players for West Ham. They've had a number of standout performers already this season, and that's helped them to those big results you mentioned earlier: Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester City. As you mentioned, that Sunderland one would be a disappointing one to only draw from that, but if you'd offered Bilic 10 points from a possible 12 from those first 4 away games, he would have snapped your hand off before the season started. Not gone 5 unbeaten away from home since a run of 7 in January 2009, so it's certainly, they're not historically very good travellers, but under Bilic they've certainly started to do that, and it's easy to see them getting anything out of any game now. They tend to be better against the big teams on the road from what we've seen so far this season, and while Palace probably aren't considered a big team yet, the way they're playing, they'll fancy the chance of getting something out of it.
Yeah, they certainly will. And the thing is, with both teams got a lot of injury doubts going into this game. You look at the potential players who could miss this, and while some of them aren't necessarily starters all the time. They're certainly key squad players who can affect a game if it's not going your way. You look at Palace there without, they might be without Connor Wickham, Jedinak, Delaney and Ward, and look at West Ham, Alex Song, Valencia, Ogbonna, Carroll, Victor Moses, Winston Reid, all those players could miss this one. So both sides, you know, suffering with injuries, and be interesting to see what the starting lineups are. But anyway, what's your score prediction?
Very tough one to call again, isn't it? Palace, we mentioned they're better on the road. West Ham, better on the road as well. But that one against Sunderland last time out wasn't the most convincing performance they've had this season. I can't really separate them. I think I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah. I think it really could go either way. It's certainly one of the toughest games to call this weekend, I think. But I'm just going to side with West Ham. Not quite sure why, but I just think that, you know, Palace, they look much better on the road, and I think West Ham might just outwit them in this game. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 West Ham win. So got one draw in this game and a West Ham win.
Okay, on up to Goodison Park, where Everton host Manchester United. Pascal, we'll start with the visitors. Incredible game against Arsenal last time out. United blown away in that one.
Yeah, all three goals from Arsenal coming inside the first 20 minutes there. And I certainly think, you know, United going into that game, they should have, you know, Arsenal went into that match off the back of that 3-2 defeat at home to Olympiacos in the Champions League, and there would have definitely been nerves in the Arsenal side there going into that game, you know, losing at home in the Champions League, losing their first two Champions League games, so much pressure on that Arsenal team going into the game. And for United to concede three inside 20 minutes and basically give the game up, you know, midway through the first half, just completely unacceptable. They'd won four games in a row in all competitions going into that, so they were in good form, United, and to give up three goals like that, I know some of them, you know, Sanchez's second was a fantastic finish. You know, all three goals were great finishes, to be fair, Ozil and the Sanchez first one as well. But even so, you can't lay in three inside the opening 20 minutes like that. And, you know, they went into that game top of the league as well, so they should have been full of confidence, while Arsenal should have been, you know, the opposite, really. So for it to unfold the way it did was very, very surprising. And now they've dropped down to third. They're only 2 points behind City. It's still very, very tight up there. But certainly, given the situation of both clubs going into that match, for them to fold like they did so early on was a real disappointment.
Yeah, and it was, as you mentioned, it was so surprising because of the contrasting natures of how they came into the side. And it's been a good test for Manchester United now, how they bounce back from that. They've had the 2-week international break, which I think came at a good time for them, but they've got a tough run coming up. This is obviously a tough game for them, Everton away. They've got the Manchester derby in their next Premier League game after that, and between them they've got a tricky trip to CSKA in Moscow, which you'd expect them to win that match, but the fact that it's a trip to Moscow and then back, sometimes teams struggle after European excursions, and with such a big game against Man City at the top of the table coming up on that Sunday, this will be a difficult period for them, particularly as they've got a few injury doubts. Rooney's probably the main one out there, but Schweinsteiger, Carrick, Herrera, you'd have to say they're not as lacking in that area of the field as they were last season when, you know, Carrick, he was out and that really hurt the team. It went on a poor run without Carrick and then improved as soon as he got back into the team. But with Herrera, Schweinsteiger and Carrick all potentially out, that could be a troublesome area of the pitch for Van Gaal going into this weekend.
Yeah, certainly, especially when you consider how well, say, like, you know, Ross Barkley's playing at the moment, he might think to exploit that central midfield area. And you touched on Rooney there. Obviously, he didn't play in England's two international games, but so he might be a doubt for this one. And to be fair, that could be a good thing for Manchester United. Rooney really hasn't enjoyed himself of late away from home in the Premier League. He hasn't scored a Premier League goal since November last year. That's 17 away games, and not scored at Goodison Park, obviously his old stomping ground, since 2007. So perhaps Rooney not being there might be a blessing in disguise, and he's struggled away from home. And so is Louis van Gaal, really. You know, since van Gaal took over, United have tend to have been, you know, much stronger at Old Trafford than they have been away from home. Van Gaal's won just 8 of his 23 league games since coming in, and when you compare that to, say, what David Moyes did, he won 10 out of his 18 games on the road. So Moyes had a much better away record than Van Gaal. So that's something that, if United really want to, you know, challenge for the title this season, they've got to win more games away from home, because at Old Trafford they do tend to be pretty good, but it's away from home where they drop too many points, and that's what allows the likes of City to pull away from them.
Yeah, and this definitely isn't an easy one. Everton should come into it full of confidence. Held to a draw last time out against Liverpool in the Merseyside derby. Obviously a huge game for the club, that one. Obviously it turned out to be Brendan Rodgers' last game for Liverpool. It's not the worst result by any stretch of the imagination, particularly as they bounced back from going behind and got that goal back pretty quickly. But the way they were playing going into that match, the way Liverpool were playing going into that match, they're probably disappointed not to come away with all 3 points from that at home. You're not going to get too many chances to at a good time to play Liverpool like that, because they were really on the ropes at that stage. And to have not, you'd say probably out of the two teams they deserved to win, if either deserved to win, but it wasn't really one side. I think Liverpool a lot of people were backing Everton going into that game, and I think they will be disappointed not to have got all 3 points from that one. But it is unbeaten in seven now, still had a good start to the season, and they've got United and then Arsenal in the next two league games, and then that's all the big boys out of the way. They've had a really tough start to the season. To be sitting seventh, it's not too bad for them.
Certainly not. And I mean, you look back at their recent sort of home record, they've only actually won one of their last six at Goodison Park. That was against Chelsea, who we know haven't had a great start to the season. But like you say, when you look at the four home games they have had since, I mean, the opening day, you know, drawing 2-2 on the opening day against Watford, that was a very disappointing result. But since then, their four home games have been against Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, and obviously Manchester United here. So they have had a tough run of fixtures there. But I think Everton will go into this game full of confidence. You know, like you say, they perhaps missed a chance to beat Liverpool in that last game because, you know, in recent times they haven't won against their rivals all that often. But certainly they'll go into this game against United, like I say, full of confidence. And there's so many players who are really playing well for them. Like I mentioned Barkley there. He was really impressing me for England. And he seems to really sort of step up to that, you know, for England without Rooney there, because I think potentially when Rooney plays, he drops in a bit, he can perhaps maybe get in Barkley's way. And the way Barkley's playing at the moment, I think he should, if it has to be one or the other in that number 10 role for England, I'd say Barkley, because he really is, he's much younger, he plays the ball quicker, he's quicker running with the ball as well, and I think he's playing so well. Obviously a great moment for Phil Jagielka, becoming the first Everton player to captain England as well, which is a really surprising stat. And obviously, Jagielka's been playing well this season, and he could be boosted by the return of John Stones this weekend. Stones been out for a couple of games, didn't play for England. He's still a doubt for this one, but probably should play. And I think all signs at the moment for Everton, you know, point to a very good season. Like you say, once they've played United here and then Arsenal away in their next game, the fixtures really do get quite a lot easier, sort of in the run-up to Christmas time. So, a lot of positive signs for Everton, I think.
Yeah, plenty of cause for optimism in that front, and their record against United recently is very good. Won their last three home league games against United without conceding a single goal along the way. Do you see them making it four in a row?
I think they've got a very, very good chance to do that. And I think you mentioned United, you know, with their injury doubts. I think Everton will start the game potentially as slight favourites. And if Stones can make a return in this one, that'll be a huge boost at the back for them. And I'm backing Everton to nick this one 2-1.
I think United, the Arsenal game was a bit of an anomaly of the result. They were looking good before that. They had scored three goals in three games in a row, and then the 2-1 win over Wolfsburg. Can see them getting back to scoring form, but as we say, Everton are playing well themselves, so I think I'm going to go for honours even here, 1-1. So we're going for one Everton victory and a draw.
Right, from one Manchester team to another, as league leader City host Bournemouth. Barnes City, they're back on top now after that 6-1 demolition of Newcastle before the international break.
Yeah, that was an incredible match, wasn't it? Really, a real game of two halves. Newcastle, they performed very well in the first 45 minutes, but just capitulated, completely collapsed in the second half. Incredible, really, to see how that, obviously, it turned into the Aguero show. He got five goals. But for such a big victory, the first half performance would have been worrying for Pellegrini, particularly off the back of those two defeats against West Ham, against Tottenham, especially that 4-1 win. And when Newcastle took the lead, and probably deserved to be two or three up, by the time Man City got the equaliser back, it would have been worrying sign. But then, as mentioned, the second half performance was very good. Newcastle didn't help themselves with some of their defending, but obviously international break has been quite costly for Man City though. Since that 6-1 demolition, they've had some injuries to key players, most notably of all, of course, Sergio Aguero. He could be out for about a month now, which obviously a huge blow for City, but it's a chance for Bonny. He hasn't really done it at City so far. He was always going to be back up to Aguero, but this is a chance for him to get some games under his belt. We saw what he could do at Swansea. He's definitely got the ability to score goals in this league. It's important now for City that he does do that while Aguero's sidelined.
Certainly is, yeah. And Aguero, you know, those five goals he scored against Newcastle, that means he's now got 16 in 13 October Premier League games since he came to these shores. So he's going to be such a massive blow if he is. So he's obviously going to miss the rest of this month and some of November as well. But it's not just him, you know. David Silva also, I think it was only after about 9 or 10 minutes he came off for Spain. So that's, you know, City's two best players there, probably Aguero and Silva, both coming off injured. Kolarov also picked up an injury playing for Serbia. I mean, he'd gone off the board a little bit, Kolarov, in the last sort of 2-3 games, but at the start of the season he was playing fantastically. So for all three of those are missing for this one, they're big blows. And Yaya Toure, he's still a doubt for this one. Vincent Kompany probably should return though, so that's a big boost for them, because he was in action for Belgium over the international break. So if he comes back, that's a huge boost for them. And certainly, with, like you said, it's a chance for Bonny to really shine with Aguero not there. And certainly that's something Kevin De Bruyne is already doing for City, the way he's been playing. He's got three goals, two assists in his first three Premier League starts for City. He's playing absolutely fantastically for them. And certainly the way he's playing and the way he's had no problem adapting to their system is certainly a boost, given that they could be without Aguero and Silva for this one.
Yeah, and those injuries, obviously a big blow, but they've probably been quite fortunate with the run of games that are coming up, when that those players will miss. You see Bournemouth here, they'll be expecting 3 points there. They have got the Manchester derby in their next Premier League game after that, but then it's Norwich City and Aston Villa. Again, you'd expect maximum points from both of those games for there, so it could have been worse fixture-wise. Of course, there's Champions League as well, which doesn't help at all, but Premier League-wise, they'll be confident of still being on top of the table at the end of that, even though they're missing some key players.
They certainly will be, and like you say, Bournemouth here at home, it's a game they'll certainly start the match as favourites. And you know, Bournemouth, it's been an okay start to the season for them, isn't it? Obviously their first ever Premier League season, first ever time in the top division, and last time out they played Watford, and it was certainly a really good chance for them to get a win on the board, and they couldn't quite do it, could they? They took the lead through Glenn Murray, who is obviously their starting striker now, with Callum Wilson out for a long time, and he opened his account there, and you know, Odi Ighalo got the equaliser for Watford, and the rest of the game, Bournemouth certainly, they did threaten a bit, and then they had a massive chance in the 85th minute to seal all 3 points, Murray taking the penalty, but it was a Gomez who kept it out from the penalty spot, so a real missed chance there to get 3 more points on the board, and now they're one of 3 sides on 8 points, sitting just above the bottom three. You know, they're not going to drop into the bottom three if they lose this weekend, because they're, I think, 4 points above 18th placed Aston Villa, but certainly, you know, nowhere near, you know, pulling away from the drop zone by any stretch of the imagination, and they certainly need to get some wins on the board to just sort of claw themselves away from that drop zone.
Yeah, and you feel that the matches against the likes of Watford, when they've got the chances to win those, they need to take advantage of them, because points are going to be fairly hard to come by in the Premier League. Just look at this weekend as an example of how tough the games can get for them. So when you're playing a fellow newly promoted team at home, you get a penalty in the 85th minute, and the way they conceded the equaliser as well, really disappointing. Obviously Artur Boric's mistake. We mentioned the injuries hurting City. Injuries have really obviously hurt Bournemouth already this season, and the likes of Mings, Wilson, Gradle, they're out for a long time. Elphick's had ankle surgery, now out for 10 weeks, perhaps out for the rest of the calendar year, which is another big blow to them. Harry Arthur is close to returning, which would be a boost, but just injury-wise, it's been so tough for Bournemouth so far. It's not helped them at all. It's always going to be an uphill battle for them to stay in the division anyway. But to have lost probably, arguably, 2 of your best players, 3 of your best players for much of the season, it's very hard to combat for Eddie Howe.
Yeah, it certainly is. And you wonder if those injuries they really could cost them a place in the league, because some of the players, I mean, Gradle and Mings, you know, they were two of their biggest summer signings. Mings wasn't really playing, but certainly Gradle really seemed to be sort of finding his feet.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Back in the Premier League with Bournemouth, and he's now out. And Callum Wilson, obviously, he was playing fantastically. I saw some stories that potentially he might have been in line for an England call-up before the injury. And you look at players like Jamie Vardy getting in the England team, and you think perhaps Wilson might have had a chance. Maybe Roy Hodgson might have given him a go, but obviously his season's just been, you know, it's absolutely ruined now, and you certainly wouldn't give Bournemouth much of a chance against City. What's your score prediction?
No, I don't give them much chance, really. They haven't been playing too badly, but City, 6-1 winners last time out, even with key players missing, they should fairly comfortably win this one, I think. I'm going to go for a 2-0 City win.
2-0, yeah. I'm going to go for a 2-goal scoreline as well, but I fancy Bournemouth to maybe just get a goal, and I'm going to go 3-1. So both picking City to win this one fairly comfortably.
On to St Mary's now, where Southampton host Leicester. Pascal, will start with the visitors back to winning ways against Norwich last time out.
Yeah, really impressive win, wasn't it? You know, I think certainly the way Leicester have been going this season, it wasn't too much of a surprise to see them win at Norwich, but Norwich have been playing quite well themselves, you know, since they came up back up from the Championship, and that win 2-1 at Norwich moved them back up to 5th in the table, only 3 points behind leaders Man City. So such a great start to the season. I think the best thing for Leicester as well was that they bounced back from that first defeat of the season home to Arsenal the week before, because Arsenal, you know, 5-2 there at the King Power, that was quite a comprehensive win for them, and for Leicester to not let it, you know, bog them down too much. You know, we've talked about in the past about how we were worried about Leicester potentially, you know, going on a really bad run of form, because like they did last season, you know, they beat Man U 5-3 and then went on a terrible run of form, you know, dropped right to the bottom. But for them to bounce back with a win at Norwich, very impressive. You know, Jamie Vardy, Jeffrey Schlupp on the score sheet there, so a really good win for them, and that's now unbeaten in 7 Premier League away games. You know, that's such a good record away from home. We've talked about, you know, other sides that have been really good away from home, like West Ham and Palace, but we haven't really mentioned, you know, Leicester in that vein. But unbeaten in 7, you know, in the Premier League, that's so impressive. And they've only done better than that once in the top flight before, when they went 9 unbeaten, and that was back in 1973. So it just shows how well they are playing, and Claudio Ranieri's really picked up from where Nigel Pearson left off last season.
Yeah, and getting goals away from home in the Premier League is not an easy thing, but with this Leicester side, they just guaranteed goals for them at the moment. They've scored and conceded in all 8 of their Premier League matches so far this season. Very exciting team to watch as a neutral, and of course the man leading the way for them at the moment is Jamie Vardy. It was Riyad Mahrez in the start of the season, but Vardy's just taken up that mantle, scored in 5 games on the bounce now, and only 3 English players have scored in 6 Premier League games in a row this century. So that's the version of history he's on. He's on magnificent form, deserves a place in the international setup the way he's going. There were questions originally when he got called up whether he was good enough to do it, having a fairly recently been playing non-league football, but he's just kept on scoring, and it's hard to argue against it. 8 goals in his 9 Premier League games now. He's just leading the way, and he's a big reason why they're doing so well this season, why they're up in 5th place.
Yeah, certainly, and I think, you know, you mentioned them being 5th there, and when you look at their fixtures coming up, there's certainly, you know, there's no reason to suggest they can't, you know, maintain that lofty position. Claudio Ranieri, you could argue he's been slightly fortunate with injuries. You know, the only person who's who's definitely out is Matty James. Nathan Dyer's a doubt. He could return this weekend, but probably a bit too soon for him. But you look at their next 5 league games, none of them against this sort of traditional big boys. You know, they've got Southampton away here. Obviously, Southampton away, very difficult game here. And then Palace at home in the next one, also a difficult game. Then they go to West Brom, Watford and Newcastle in the next 3 after that. So even though, you know, Southampton and Palace in the next 2 are what you would class difficult games, none of them are against, you know, the biggest sides in the league. And the way Leicester are going, you wouldn't necessarily back against them in any of those games. So, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise come, you know, say December, if Leicester was still in sort of, you know, the top 6-7.
This is certainly a very difficult game, I think, this weekend, though, because Southampton, they've had 2 really good wins on the bounce now in the Premier League, and 6-0 against MK Dons in the League Cup as well before that. So beaten Swansea and then Chelsea, both 3-1. Really, really good results for them, especially last time out away to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. I mean, we've talked extensively about Chelsea's problems already, but it's still a fantastic result for them. A really good performance as well, because they deserved the victory. Fought back from Williams' free kick, which a great strike from Williams. You'd say the keeper probably should have done better, but the way they fought back, got that deserved victory, the way the likes of Dusan Tadic, Sadio Mane just gave Chelsea defenders the runaround. They looked men versus boys at times, it looked like. And of course Graziano Pelle putting the icing on the cake with another goal for him, and he's in fantastic form as well. So it's all looking quite good for Southampton so far, and they'll be pretty confident ahead of this weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned Pelle there. He's really, really impressed me of late, and he scored for Italy over the international break, so you can see he's a real player in really good form at the moment. You know, like you said, against Chelsea, he scored 1 and he assisted the other 2 goals as well. The week before, he assisted 2 against Swansea. So even if he's not necessarily scoring goals, he's one of those strikers who's more than happy to get his teammates involved, and he's always looking for, you know, a key pass. So he's assisting goals, scoring goals, and I think certainly he's having a great season, but you could argue that he could be having an even better season when you look at the stats, because he's missed the target twice as many times as any other player from when he's shot from inside the box. He's had 18 efforts missed the target from inside the box, and I think the nearest player is Rudiger Stead with 9. So that just shows that, you know, if he just sorted out his finishing and maybe got a few more on target, that he could be doing even better. And his record, Pelle in particular, is certainly much better when Southampton play at home at St Mary's. And you look at their next 4 league games at home, they've got Leicester here, then they've got Bournemouth, Stoke and Aston Villa in their next 4 home league games, and you'd certainly say in all those games you'd back him to score. And yeah, the way Southampton are going, 9th at the moment, but given those 2 impressive recent wins, you'd certainly back them to keep climbing the table.
And what's your score prediction for this one?
A really tough game to score this one. I certainly think it could be very exciting. You know, Southampton, the way they've been playing of late, you know, 6 goals in 2 games, you'd back them to score. And we already mentioned that Leicester have had a goal, you know, at both ends in every single game this season. So it should be a high scoring game. It's probably going to finish 0-0, but I'm going to go for 3-2 Southampton.
Yeah, I'm predicting quite a few goals as well. It's another one I find it tough to call. There's quite a few matches tough to call this weekend, but I think I'm going to go for a draw, 2-2 this one. So we've got 1 draw and a Southampton victory.
To the last of the 3 p.m. kickoffs then, as West Brom take on Sunderland in a match between 2 of the bottom 4. Barnes will start with Sunderland. There's a new manager on Weir's side, with Sam Allardyce taking over from Dick Advocaat.
Yeah, and a very good appointment. I think Allardyce is one of those managers who I feel any team who really gets rid of him usually regrets it. Obviously, that hasn't really been the case with West Ham so far this season, but you look at the other teams, often the teams have gone down soon after they've got rid of him. So he's very good at keeping clubs in the division. Fans, if they ask after a nice style of play, that was the big sticking point with West Ham. I think he did a very good job at West Ham, but they were just after something different, the owners there. I think for Sunderland, they can't really worry about that at the moment. They need to worry about getting themselves out of the position they're in, because 3 points, still looking for their first win of the season. It's looking pretty dire for them. They're already 5 points from safety. So it's a very big job for Allardyce to do. I do think he's capable of doing it, and I think the main thing he'll bring to it is making the team more solid at the back, because defensively, they were just making far, far too many mistakes to have any sort of success so far this season. And that's the first thing Allardyce will look to do. I think he's capable of doing it. He's got a decent track record for keeping teams in the division, so I think it's a very good appointment from Sunderland.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the defence there. Certainly in their last league game, you know, Avocar's last game, they took a 2-0 lead at home to West Ham, which was really, really impressive, because West Ham in their previous three away games had beaten Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City. So for them to take a 2-0 lead there, Fletcher and Jermaine Lenz on the score sheet. Lenz with that, it was a great finish, wasn't it, that chip that went in off the bar, but then he went and got himself sent off. I think he got a very early booking in the game, and then, you know, obviously maybe he'd forgotten about it after scoring, maybe the euphoria of scoring, completely forgotten that he'd been booked, because he went in for a silly tackle, second yellow card, and then that led to West Ham, you know, coming back, Carl Jenkinson and Dimitri Payet bringing them back to 2-2. So I think it was the nature of the defeat, wasn't it? I mean, for them to throw away a 2-goal lead like that, Avocar was never really going to last that long. And certainly, you know, you talked about their place in the table there. They're facing, you know, the first time since 1977 without, you know, a league win in their opening 9 games of a season. So it just shows how bad of a start it has been this term. And yeah, for Avocar, he must just be thinking, you know, now that he has gone, you know, why did he? Because, you know, he said he wasn't going to stay on during the summer. Then, you know, the fans, because he obviously did well to keep him up last season, the fans said, you know, that they were sort of saying for him, you know, please come back, you know, you did such a good job. But it was, you know, you just look at their squad on paper and you always think they're going to struggle with the players they've got, and certainly he couldn't make it work. And it'll be interesting to see if Allardyce starts, because it's a huge, huge job for him.
I think one more thing about the Allardyce appointment is it should give them a bit of stability. He generally stays at club for a while, and they've been stuck in this cycle we've mentioned before for the last couple of seasons, where a new man comes in to keeps him up and has gone within the first 10 games of the next season. So I think Allardyce should give them a bit more stability. I think it's important they stick with him even if he doesn't keep him up this season, because it's a tall order for him. But having said that, going into this, his first game, he's playing West Brom at a very good time. Tony Pulis teams, you always feel are going to be difficult to beat, but they just haven't been in good form at all, particularly at home. They lost at Palace, so last time out 2-0, and they just didn't play well. They never got going. Pulis was pretty critical of his team after the match, deservedly lost that game. And at home, if you look at their record at the moment, they've got 1 point from a possible 12, so they need to improve in that respect. You have to say that they've had difficult matches: Manchester City, Chelsea, Southampton and Everton in their home game so far, but still looking for that first home win of the season. And it's a surprise for me to see them so low down in the division, because I thought they'd have a decent campaign this time around, but hasn't turned out that way so far. Pulis needs to rectify that soon, and although Sunderland have a new man in charge, this is as good a game as any as they'll get right now to doing that.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, look at where the table is, you know, West Brom, they're one of, you know, a few teams just above the bottom three with 4 points ahead. So they can't, you know, even if they lose, obviously if they lose this weekend against Sunderland, that will see Sunderland really close the gap, but they can't drop into the bottom three this weekend. And yeah, you mentioned that West Brom, you know, their form is 3 defeats in a row in all competitions, and they'll go into this game with some real defensive problems. It looks like Jonas Olsen and Johnny Evans could both be out of this one. So that's a huge blow at the back there. And you know, clean sheets, you know, they had 3 straight clean sheets, I think it was, before these 3 defeats in a row. But generally, defensively, they haven't been good enough this season, and goals have been, you know, an issue as well. You know, the Berahino thing off the pitch isn't going to help, and Rondon's had his odd moment, but he's obviously still adapting to the English game. And you look at the stats from when they've scored their goals this season, all of their goals have come between the half an hour mark and the hour mark, all in that sort of 30-minute period. They haven't scored in the first half an hour or the last half an hour of a game, which is certainly an odd stat, because they're not starting games well and they're not finishing games well. And when you do that, you're not going to have a good season, are you? Because you have to play well. Well, if you're, obviously you can have a great season, you need to play well throughout 90 minutes, but not starting or finishing games well is never going to put you in good stead. And that's just one of a number of many areas that Tony Pulis has really got to put right soon.
Yeah, you mentioned the goal scoring problems they've had there. drew blanks in two of their last three games in all competitions, and their two victories in the league so far this season have both been 1-0 ones against Stoke and against Aston Villa, as I mentioned, both away from home. So that is an area they need to improve. They invested fairly heavily with Rondon, and Lambert came in obviously in the summer as well. So it's an area that will probably be confusing Pulis, because he's got some decent options up there, but they just don't seem to be finding the back of the net. You mentioned that Berahino thing there. They could do with him really getting back to full form. I think if he needs to just put his head down and get on with it, forget about what happened all in the transfer window, and just get on with the job, because if he wants to get his place back in the England squad, for example, he needs to do the business for West Brom. And with the Euros coming up, England qualify for that pretty emphatically, and with quite a few striking options they've got now, with the likes of Vardy coming through and having such a good season, Berahino needs to be at his best if he stands a chance of getting in there.
Certainly does, yeah. And I think West Brom, the stats don't necessarily point, well, you know, in October they've not won any of their last Premier League, any of their last nine Premier League games in the month of October, so that maybe points to them not doing well here. But then on the other hand, you know, they've won five and lost none of their last six home league games against Sunderland. So when Sunderland have gone to the Hawthorns in recent years, they have done pretty well. So quite a tough game to call if you look at those two stats. What's your prediction?
Yeah, there's usually reaction from a team when they get a new manager in, and I think Allardyce will get that sort of reaction from them. So it's a very tough one to call. I think I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw, yeah. I just think potentially with West Brom, with those the injuries that I mentioned, Jonas Olsen, Johnny Evans, because Evans has come in and looked fairly sound in that West Brom defence. I think if they're both missing, I think Sunderland might just fancy their chance. I'm going to back them to win 2-1 on Allardyce's first game. So I've got one draw and an away win for Sunderland.
Okay, on to Saturday's late kickoff, where Watford are hosting Arsenal. Start with the visitors, Pascal. Fantastic performance from him in the opening 20 minutes against Manchester United last time out.
Really was, yeah. Completely blew away United, who, you know, they went into that game top of the league, Man U. So for Arsenal to do that in the opening 20 minutes, three goals like that, and basically put the game to bed very early on, very, very impressive. And I'd say especially so after that, you know, defeat at home to Olympiacos in midweek in the Champions League. You know, it looks like they're probably not going to make it through the group stage of the Champions League now for the first time in 15, 16 years, I think it is. You know, they have to beat Bayern at least once in the two games they've got coming up against them. So really tough ask. So for them to, yeah, like I said, score three goals in the opening 20 minutes against United, very, very impressive. And the man in form, Sanchez, was the star man again, because the first six games of this Premier League season, he hadn't scored a goal and didn't look like quite the same player that he was last season. Maybe that's because, you know, he helped Chile win the Copa America over the summer, perhaps a bit tired, but you know, he got his hat-trick the week before against Leicester, and then two more, and great finishes as well. The first one, a Cruyff flick, and then stunning long-range effort to make it 3-0. So he's a man in really good form. And then Ozil got the second goal as well, and that came after he was really, really poor, I thought, against Olympiacos. Just, yes, ruining the game for Arsenal, I thought, the way he kept intercepting passes in the middle. But he was, you know, back to much more like his best self against Man U, and a really tidy finish as well. So that was, yeah, a really important win for Arsenal too. It took them obviously back above United in second in the table, just behind City. They are now at the top there, so much improved. And Sanchez, obviously 5-2 games in the league now, he's back to his best.
Yeah, and he carried on that goal scoring form in the international break as well, 3-2 for Chile during that thing. I think there may be a question mark over his availability this weekend, though. He played 90 minutes in Peru on Tuesday. Is he going to be tired? You mentioned him being that hangover from the Copa America perhaps at the start of the season. He's one player who just, he puts so much energy into every performance, so it wouldn't be too much of a surprise to see him rested. And if Wenger is planning on resting him, this match is probably the best one to do it coming up, because they've got Everton, Swansea, North London derby against Tottenham, and in the midst of all that, they've got that crucial Bayern Munich doubleheader you mentioned there, where they need to win one of those matches if they're going to make it through the group stages. So out of those ones, this is certainly the most winnable game on paper for Arsenal, so I wouldn't be too surprised to see Sanchez, despite such a good form, be rested for this weekend.
No, I wouldn't be surprised either, to be honest. Like you say, this seems like the most sense to rest him here, because of those, yeah, they're really tough games coming up for Arsenal, and so, so important as well. And if he doesn't play, you wonder if maybe Giroud and Walcott will start together, because of late Walcott has been the man to lead the line for them, and you have to say he's justified his inclusion. He's got 12 goals and 3 assists in his last 14 Premier League starts, which is a fantastic record. But then Giroud, he scored a brace for France during the international break, so he's been playing well for his country. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see if maybe Wenger plays both. There may be a change of system. If not, you know, there's still plenty of options up there if Alexis is rested. And you know, even with all those options, they've still got some key players missing as well. And you'd have to say that Koscielny and Wilshere are probably the biggest absentees they've got, and they'll remain absent for this game. And perhaps, you know, the lack of Koscielny there might just be where Watford are trying to, you know, exploit this weekend.
And you mentioned Walcott banging form for Arsenal up front there. Watford have got their own in-form striker, and Odione Carlo got the only goal against Bournemouth last time out for them. A decent result for them, especially considering the way the game went. It might be one they viewed as potential winnable encounter, but the way the match went, they'll be happy with a point out of that one. Obviously, Glenn Murray missing the late penalty. Really good save for that one from Aurelio Gomez. He looks to be in decent form. He had his critics during his time with Tottenham, but he's in decent form. And at the other end of the pitch, as I mentioned, Odione Carlo's really starting to find his feet. The goal against Bournemouth was an absolute gift, has to be said, and he gleefully wrapped that one up. So if he can carry on the form, then Watford will always feel they've got the goals to keep themselves safe of danger. 10 points from their opening 8 games, 12th in the table. It's been a decent start to the season so far.
Yeah, it definitely has, yeah. But I think you can't expect Igalo to keep going the way he's going. He really needs help. I mean, I think Troy Deeney's played okay in most of their games this season, but obviously him not scoring, it's just going to add more and more pressure. You know, whenever he gets the ball now in a decent position, say if he goes through one-on-one or gets a good chance on goal, there's just going to be so much pressure on him to score because he's still waiting for that first Premier League goal. And, you know, you look at Igalo's stats, he scored their last 5 Premier League goals, and they've only got 6 all season. He scored 5 of those 6, so... You know, he really does need help up there, whether it's from the midfield, you know, set pieces, you know, defenders contributing from the odd set piece. But at the moment, Igalo has just been, you know, like you said, pounced on that chance against Bournemouth. There was a couple of others, say Newcastle gave up a couple of quite soft goals for him. And if teams, you know, stop maybe, you know, letting Igalo through so easily, you wonder where Watford's goals might come from. So that's an area they need to address. Defensively, they've been fairly solid, but they're not exactly lighting it up at the other end. So 12th seems about right for them, and it's been, like you said, a fairly sort of decent start to the season.
This is obviously a very difficult match. They've actually never won a Premier League game in the month of October before. Do you see, give them any chance of ending that statistic this time around?
I don't, to be honest, no. Arsenal, you know, that was a fantastic performance in their last game against United, and even if we talked about Sanchez being rested, obviously that would give Watford a boost, but even if he is rested, you still expect the Gunners to have too much here, and I'm going to go for them to win 3-1.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, actually. Arsenal, they will rightly go into this match as favourite. Obviously, as we've seen already this season, prone to the odd poor result, but I can't see that happening this weekend, to be honest, so I agree with that. 3-1 Arsenal victory. So we're both going for fairly comfortable Arsenal wins there.
Just the one game on Sunday this weekend, and it's at St James's Park as bottom of the table Newcastle take on Norwich. Barnes Newcastle, they're rock bottom now after that 6-1 defeat at Man City.
Yeah, they look to be in a bit of trouble at the moment, don't they? There was a dreadful result, obviously, against Man City last time out, and just don't really know where it came from, because first half they should have been ahead at the break. They had missed a few really good chances. You could see McLaren getting increasingly animated on the side, more the chances that went, because there was always the feeling that they needed to take them. They could have been 3-1 up at half time, but actually only went in 1-1, and then the second half collapse was just embarrassing, to be honest with you. Aguero obviously had played fantastically well, 5 goals for him, but Newcastle made it pretty easy for him on occasions. Their defence was dreadful. They've got the worst goal difference in the league now, still looking for their first win of the season. That was the low point so far, 6-1. Obviously not many people would have been expecting them to get anything out of that game against Man City, but the manner of the collapse after such a positive first half performance, really disappointing for them. And you look back to last season now, they've lost 14 of their last 19 Premier League games, only got one winner there. It's hard to see where their first victory is coming from if they carry on performing as they did in the second half. As I said, they should take some positives from that first half performance. They proved that they can give one of the best teams in the league a game when they're on form, but they need to do it over the full 90 minutes, otherwise they're going to be punished over and over again.
Conceding 6 in that game, and they've only actually kept 1 clean sheet all season. That was in that surprising draw they got at Manchester United when it finished 0-0. So, you know, defensively they've been struggling, and you know the injuries are just mounting up for McLaren, and you kind of feel sorry for him a little bit. You know, he's got defensive problems already. The likes of, you know, Paul Dummett, Daryl Yanmat, Haidara, they potentially could miss this game. And then over the international break they lose Tim Krul to a really serious knee injury. I think he's done his ACL, and could be about 10-12 months he's out for now, which is obviously the rest of the season and then potentially some of the start of next season as well. So, you know, with all those defensive problems they've got, you'd probably say on his day that Tim Krul is perhaps their best defensive player when he's on good form between the sticks, but he's now going to be out. And Carl Darlow, the young goalkeeper they signed from Nottingham Forest, he's already injured as it is, so it's going to be Rob Elliott in goal this weekend, and that's just such a huge blow for them. And, you know, the injuries mounting up like that, and you wonder if, you know, McLaren, how long he's got really, but, you know, with the injuries he's got, you know, Kroll now being out and some of the other, you know, results they've had, you do feel for him a little bit, but you just wonder how long he's got.
Yeah, the pressure's certainly starting to mount. I mean, his own personal record in the Premier League, his own personal record in 2015, if you look back to the way Derby collapsed at the end of last season as well, is not very good. And we've already seen a couple of managers go from the Premier League this season, and it wouldn't be too much of a surprise if he follows them out the door fairly soon. He's got Norwich coming up and then West Brom in the next two games. Norwich coming up and then Sunderland in the next two games. That one against Sunderland is a massive match. If they're on the end of a poor defeat there to Sunderland at the Stadium of Light, that could be the end of McLaren, because he's still looking for that first win in the Premier League. He's only beaten Northampton in sole reign so far. You don't get much time, especially at a club like Newcastle nowadays in the Premier League, with so much money in the for coming in for the rights next season. Survival is more important this season than it ever has been before. So I think he's on borrowed time at the moment, but good results in these next two games could have a deciding impact on his future, and bad performances could see him go.
Yeah, certainly. I was up in Newcastle for some Rugby World Cup games recently, speaking to like some cab drivers up there. I don't think any of them really wanted him to stay in much longer. I saw the name Harry Redknapp mentioned, and another one told me that he really wanted to see Brendan Rodgers now that he's left Liverpool. I mean, as for the Rodgers thing, I personally can't really see Rodgers dropping down to the side, you know, this bottom of the table, given that he was in charge of Liverpool and, you know, had done, you know, in some of his seasons there at Liverpool, a pretty good job. So it would be a pretty significant step down for him. But like you say, the next fixture's coming up for Newcastle. Yeah, Norwich here, then Sunderland. Then they've got Stoke, Bournemouth in their next two after that. So you certainly say that if McLaren doesn't get at least a couple of wins, say, in these next four games and really sort of start to get some points on the board, it could be the end of him. And Norwich here, you know, they come into this game. Norwich, they lost last time before the international break at home to Leicester. We all know how well Leicester have been playing this season. But for Norwich, it was another one of those games where they fell 2-0 down. Vardy and Schlupp on the score sheet. And then Mbokani came on and scored his first goal for the club. And, you know, they did then threaten towards the end of the game once they'd, you know, half the deficit. But they never quite were able to get there. And that ended a four-game unbeaten run in all competitions. So they have been playing well up to that point. And you have to say that Norwich, like the other two promoted teams, it's been a decent start to the season for them. All three outside the bottom three as it stands. And although none of them's had a great start to the season and is really sort of pushing in the top half, you'd have to say that all three would be fairly content with the way they've played. And, you know, all three, I think, stand a good chance of staying up.
Yeah, they're 5 points adrift of the relegation zone at the moment, which is, as you say, a decent start. 9 points from the opening eight games is not great, probably, but the performances have been good. The matches they have lost, they've generally played fairly well in them as well. Obviously, you mentioned the one against Leicester. There was Crystal Palace on the opening day, and Southampton didn't play well in that match, but it was largely down to an early red card they got. So it's positives to take from the defeat so far. I think these next two games are going to be pretty important to get points on the board. Newcastle, obviously, bottom of the table. West Brom, they're down in 17th as well in their next two games. And then it starts to get a bit tougher for them. They've got Man City, Swansea, Chelsea and Arsenal in their four after that. So big two games coming up for them. If they can get some more points on the board, distance themselves again from the bottom teams. If not, then they could find themselves in trouble come the start of December or so.
Yeah, they'll certainly be targeting, you know, a win in this one, given, you know, how Newcastle have struggled all season. But they've never actually won at St James's Park in the Premier League, Norwich. So it'd be a bit of a big ask for them. Where do you see it going?
Yeah, another tough one to call. I think Norwich, they can come up with decent results. They've got a draw away to the likes of Liverpool, away to the likes of West Ham already this season. Newcastle, hard to see them getting a win from anywhere at the moment. So I think I'm going to go for a Norwich 2-1 victory here.
Really? I'm actually going to go completely the other way. I think, you know, Newcastle, I know Norwich have had a solid start to the season, but I think most teams playing Norwich at home would fancy themselves, and maybe this could be the chance for Newcastle to get that first win, so I'm going to back them to win 2-1. So me and Barnes split on this one. 2-1 to Norwich for Barnes, 2-1 to Newcastle for me.
And finally, on to Monday's game between Swansea and Stoke at the Liberty Stadium. Pascal, will start with the home side. 2-2 draw against Tottenham Hotspur last time out before the international break.
Yeah, it was a good game to watch, actually. I thought that Swansea, you know, when they look back at it, they'll probably think a point isn't the worst result, but then you counter that by saying, you know, they took the lead twice in that game and couldn't see it out. You know, the first goal was a really, really good goal, actually. They're in a tight spot at the back, and they managed to work it out down the right before breaking quickly. Went out to Montero, who looked, you know, back on really good form, Montero, because he started the season so well, didn't he, but then was out injured for a while. But he looked on great form. He crossed it in. and Ayew with a really good header. He's obviously still scoring goals for his new club, and you have to say that, you know, both goals they concede, I think Fabianski in goal, he'll be very disappointed at the way Christian Eriksen, you know, both of them free kicks, you know, and it was those free kicks where Eriksen didn't go over the wall, he went to the keeper's side and Fabianski let both in. I mean, the first one especially, it looked like it took a deflection when it first went in, but then watching the replays back, it didn't really take a deflection. Fabianski was just unsighted and he just kind of guessed that it was going to go over the wall, and then it went in very, very centrally. So he was at fault for that one. And the second one, again, all his weight was on the other foot as Eriksen, you know, picked him off and went to the other corner. So disappointing in that sense. And Spurs certainly then had their chances to win the game, and they could have easily gone ahead, but it was actually Swansea who, right at the death, they were so close to winning it. I think it was Fernandez's header that Lloris got a fingertip to tipping it onto the bar. So they almost nicked it, but they could have also lost it. So when looking back on it, a draw is probably not the worst result, but it does move them down into the bottom half now, 11th in the table. So, you know, it's been an okay start to the season for Swansea, but considering where they were after the first month, quite disappointing.
Yeah, it's been a strange season so far for Swansea, hasn't it? Obviously, they've got the superb results against Chelsea, getting a draw there on the opening day, and then beating Manchester United, but they're without to win in 5 in all competitions now, failed to score in 3 of those. They've only actually won 2 of their last 10 Premier League games, which, you know, you don't really get the sort of feeling they're in that sort of form. There is optimism around the club. They're playing decent football, and when the key players are on form, they can really, really hurt any team in the league. So it is a bit of a strange one. You'd expect them to be higher than 11th in the table. More, they should have really got more than 10 points from their 8 games so far. Gary Monk, he looks like a bright young manager. He's got a decent team on his hands, and he'll be wanting this team to pick up these points that they should be picking up now, because the recent results have been really disappointing, a really disappointing September overall, and he needs to get them back into good form. He's had the players, his key players, free from injury pretty much the whole season. He's only used 14 players from the start in the Premier League this season, which is the fewest in the league. Andre Ayew could miss out this week, which would be a big blow for them, but in general he's had a bit of luck, so to only be on 10 points from 8 games, perhaps not as good as he should be expecting.
No, certainly not. And I think if you look at their next 5 fixtures coming up, it's certainly a big chance for them to get a string of wins together. Stoke at home here, a very winnable game. And they go to Villa, and we all know how Villa are struggling. Their toughest game in the next run of 5 is against Arsenal, but even that one's at home, which they'd maybe fancy themselves winning. And then the 2 after that, Norwich away, Bournemouth at home. So you look at those next 5 fixtures, they really look like it looks like a really nice stretch of a run for them. And like you say, they've largely stayed injury-free this season. Ayew is a doubt for this one, but if he manages to pull through and play, they've got a full-strength side available, and with the likes of Sigurdsson, Gomis, like I mentioned about Montero being seemingly back on his best form. So I think, you know, it was a very disappointing September and then start to October after that fantastic opening month of the season, but the fixtures coming up certainly suggest that they could be back to a good form soon.
Yeah, Stoke have gone pretty much the opposite way, haven't they? They started the season pretty slowly, not terribly. Draws against Tottenham, draws against Norwich, narrowly lost to Liverpool on the opening day, of course, but finally started to get the wheels moving now. 3 wins in a row in all competitions, clean sheets in 2 of those as well, up into 14th, finally starting to look a bit like the team we expected from them after such a good transfer window, and the positive signs, the positive moves they've made under Mark Hughes since he took over. Wins at home to Bournemouth and Aston Villa, win at home to Bournemouth, away to Aston Villa, it's not the best results, they're not setting the world alight, but they were needed victories, and once they get a bit of momentum, they've got the types of players. Arnautovic got the winning goal against Aston Villa, he's a case in point, confidence players you'd really call them, and as soon as they get the wheels in motion, then they should start climbing up the table and continuing in that manner.
Yeah, definitely. And Arnautovic as well, he's been in good form for Austria, and obviously they qualified with a fantastic record for Euro 2016 in those games, so you know, he's performing on the international stage as well. And we talked about Swansea not really having any injury troubles at all, but that's not the case for Stoke. You know, they've arguably lost their best player this season when Ryan Shawcross, he's had that back surgery because he's had that long-standing back problem. He's trying to get that fixed. He's close to returning, but this game's probably too soon for him. But Juve is another doubt as well. He should be fit for this one by what I read earlier today. So if he's fit for them, that'd be a huge boost. And then the sooner Shawcross gets back, the better, because he'll shore up their back line. And if they went to Swansea and won in this game, that'd be the first time since December 2011 that they've won back-to-back a Premier League away game. So certainly an incentive there. And I think most people would be giving them a chance.
And do you give them a chance? What's your score prediction?
I think they might get a point from this one. I think Swansea, you know, like I said, they gave Spurs quite a few chances in that last game that they had. So I think Stoke, you know, given, like I said, that Arnautovic is playing well, and certainly Boyan, he's back in the team as well. So I think there's certainly a chance that Stoke could be able to get a goal here, and I think it'll finish 1-1.
Yeah, Stoke's, the form book certainly says Stoke will win, but I've got a feeling for Swansea in this one. I think they're going to nick it 2-1. So I've got one Swansea victory and a draw. So that's all 10 games wrapped up there. Be sure to head to sportsmall.co.uk for live coverage of every single one of those games, in addition to reaction, analysis, player ratings, and much more. We'll be back next week. Look forward to seeing you then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.